You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Yeah, there you go. I'm not going to tell you what I did. It was really stupid. So, I need a piece out of my studio to go on the road with me. And so, it's a preamp. I will tell you what I did. So, it's a preamp. So, what happens is, like, the headset that I wear, right, that has a microphone, that's a pretty high quality little gizmo. Different microphones have different kind of power situations, right? So anyway, many of them don't have enough power. The microphone doesn't have enough power to send the mixer a powerful enough signal, right? To have the level that you want that's powerful and vibrant and stuff like that. So what you do is you use a preamp. So at the end of the cord for the microphone, before it goes into the mixer, you stick this thing, right? This little kind of metal box. And it amplifies the signal. And then that gets sent. Preamp, right? Yeah, now I understand, Mac. So the preamp boosts the signal that goes into the mixer. Then you can manipulate it in the mixer and it sounds good. So I have to take it with me when I go on the road. So yesterday, I got back Saturday. Sunday, I'm kind of unpacking and doing my thing. And I put the preamp in and I'm like, what's that extra cable to? I'm like, is that from the old boom mic that I used to use? And is that what it is there? Yeah, I forgot. It's the cord that plugs it into the mixer. Yeah, anyway. So, I know, stupid, right? But it's my house. It's my studio. It's my mixer. It's my preamp. It's all mine. And the mistake is mine as well. Good morning to you. And always good to be home. And so we've been home for, what, a week, 10 days, something like that, and then head up to Montana for about 8 days. Yeah, I'm fired up. I did the map chip for that, and I'll go speak. I'll do post-traumatic win 3 times up there for groups of Marines that are getting together, and hopefully give them a tool that they can go and change people's lives with. So I'm fired up to do that. Going to get to see Montana Man up there? Yes, and I'll get to counsel him and straighten his shit out. So I'm fired up about that. Always good to have a chance to mentor people that need to be mentored, and Montana Man certainly needs it. So, but I get a chance to get up to his place and whatnot. So excited to do that. And yeah, mapped it out last night where I'm going in Montana. And since we're talking about it, let me tell you where I'm headed. So I fly into Billings. That's the airport, right? Now, Montana man lives about 80 miles to the west of Billings in a place called Big Timber, which I've affectionately named Big Shitter. So anyway, so fly up there, and then Big Shitter is like centrally located relative to where I'm going to speak. I speak in, so Big Timber is right in the center of kind of this rectangle in western Montana that, central and western Montana that I'll operate in. It's western Montana, not central. So Montana's giant state. Anywho, so Big Timber's kind of right in the middle. I'll go to Nye, Montana, which is kind of in the mountains that are north of Yellowstone. Yeah. So I'll go to Nye and do post-traumatic winning there. And that's about, Big Timber to Nye is 78 miles. So, and in Montana, I don't think they have speed limits. They used not to, but I don't know if they do now. But so, what, going 80 miles an hour, that's less 80. You might get rear-ended going 80. So going whatever's safe, it'll be above 80. So less than an hour to Nye. And depending on the roads, though, those windy two-lane roads. So then, let's see, a few days later, I go to Fort Smith in Montana. And Fort Smith is in the kind of, it's on the Crow Indian Reservation. So it's due east of Nye, so it makes that southeast of Big Shitter. And so, let's see, that's about 169 miles, right? So that's 2 hours, maybe a little bit more than 2 hour drive from Big Shitter, from Montana Man. And then a few days later, I go up to Helena. And from Big Shitter to Helena, it's 152 miles, so about 2.5 hours. So anyway, yeah. Montana. Mm-hmm. So, headed up there. Headed up there. And so I'm excited. The trip last week, if you listen to it, it was really interesting. And one of the things I did was I tried to talk to leaders about, you know, one of the things I've concluded about post-traumatic winning is, of all the people I met, and this, the coolest thing about the trip was seeing Marines I met a year and a half ago and seeing where their lives are now. And it's cool, man. It is cool on top of cool on top of cool on top of cool. When I met these Marines, they were fucked up as Hogan's goat, man. It was not pretty, and they were, some of them were distraught about where they were in life, and being able to show them a path, being able to show them how to help others, and they've done it, and they're good, right? So, yeah, it's like being this cool uncle, and then in the space of 18 months, everybody got cooler, except you, but it's all right. You're already cool enough. So yeah, it was awesome. So I'd go from lunch to doing post-traumatic winning to dinner with somebody, to getting ready to go meet somebody, you know, to talk about the leadership aspect of it. Yeah, and so this is what, you know, this is what I've concluded. So the institution, right? The institution. How do you make this not a haphazard thing? How do you make it a deliberate event that we're able to put downward pressure on, these destructive behavior numbers, right? Suicide the most visible, but divorce, alcoholism, and a whole bunch of other ones that goes with that. Homelessness would ultimately be in there, but not so much for active duty people. And then in the back of my mind is a statistic that I've run across. If you join the all-volunteer force, and this has been true for centuries, right? If you join the military, a lot of times you are trying to escape a situation. And so sometimes it's poverty. And what the military offers is a steady paycheck and upward mobility out of poverty. So the military has been used like that, again, for centuries. Sometimes it's a way out of a really bad, bad situation. And you're a good person, but you're, whether it be by virtue of your birth or circumstance, you're trying to get the hell out of someplace. And so it's not, you know, just upward mobility, you know, socially and economically. Sometimes, you know, it's for your survival because you're in a family with abusive people and you're trying to get out of that. So for whatever reason, people who join the all-volunteer force, this is from the Journal of American Medicine, I think psychiatry publication, but they're 50% more likely to have significant trauma in their life. 50% more likely. Now, I want you to remember that. If you're a veteran, you are 50% more likely to commit suicide than a non-veteran. And that's after military service. Is that the same trend line? I think it is, but I would give you some caveats. I think it looks to be the same, right? It's not a flat line. And I'll explain it to you because I think about shit like this. So my thought is this. People that come from shitty circumstances, they come in the military. And does it work for everybody? No. But does it work for some? Yes. So I would say that as people stay in, that line that we start with is a declining line, right? Is a declining line. As they find financial success, as they find stability in their life, you know, many people find their way out of the desperate situations they were in when they joined. So say you're 50% more likely to have these experiences, right? And then the other data point is 50% more likely to kill yourself. So what I think is the people, the 50% that are more likely to have those experiences, you know, there's a lot of people that deal with those things effectively. So that line is declining, okay? Now, there's another line, though, that's ascending, that gets overlaid on that. And that is life happens, you know, to everybody when they come in the military. And so what you have is people that you have go through traumatic things in their life. And so there's another line that it includes everybody. So you have people with pre-existing conditions. I'll use that term because it's in the news a lot. But they're pre-existing traumatic conditions, right? And I think that's a declining line. You have other people that join, and they may or may not be affected by trauma. There's some people that are affected by, right, the pre-existing conditions that never deal with them and their lives don't get better. So they're part of the second line, and that's an increasing line, right, of people that get exposed to traumatic experiences and don't learn how to deal with it. And ultimately, it looks like a horizontal line, but it's not. Okay? But it's not. Okay. Now, so I have that data in the back of my head. Okay, now here's a realization for you. Our culture's changed. Okay? So what do you do when when the culture changes? Okay. I'll give you a little thing here. When the landscape changes and you don't, right? So any doubt in anybody's mind that our culture's changed? Right, that our culture's softer now. Now, we've been saying that forever. It always gets softer. Right? So, but our culture's different. Kids are raised different. They are different. And that is the lament of time. Okay? So, has leadership adjusted to it? I'm not sure. I don't think so much. Okay? Been preoccupied by 20 years of war and not sure that leadership has moved quick enough to account for the differences in our culture. has counseling. Now, I spent a lot of time thinking about this. In Post-Traumatic Winning, in the presentation, I have a quote from Gerald Mattis who says, if you don't love them, then you need to get out. Everybody familiar with that, right? You've all heard it. Do you want me to play it? I could play it. Let me find it here. If you don't love your Marines, and you really ought to get out, the only reason I stuck around that low-paying outfit for 40 years was because of. And, hold on. Oh, there it is. Stand by.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that low-paying outfit for 40 years is for the absolute.
For the absolute.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that low-paying outfit for 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marines. And the infantry got its name, infant soldier, infantry, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda anytime you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, PFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
Okay, so there you have a what? 40-plus years of experience. I don't know, 6, 7 combat deployments. And he's telling you, you've got to love them. You've got to no-shit love them. Because if you don't love them, it doesn't work so good. Now, here's General Furness, who's got, what, 35-plus years? So between him, 75 years of leadership experience in the Marine Corps. General Furness, 6 or 7 combat deployments. So between him, 12 to 14 combat deployments, 75 years of experience. This is what General Furness says about this stuff.
This is Major General Furness again. One of the critical parts to making post-traumatic winning work is getting to know your Marines better. That starts with utilizing either the Octagon or our own counseling order. But the bottom line is you've got to get to know who you're leading. You got to get to know your Marines and sailors better and try to get them on a path to make them better human beings first. Better human beings make better Marines and sailors. Better Marines and sailors make better warfighters. And then we've also doubled down on how we counsel Marines in the division, not just using performance counseling, but counseling to get to know who they are first and foremost, get them on a path to be better people, better individuals, so that they can become better Marines. And so we're implementing that step by step. It's taken hold throughout most of the units in the division, and it has shown great promise.
Okay. So, Furness says you have to know them better. All right? Now, I will tell you that the key to post-traumatic winning is that you get on my radar, you stay on my radar. Right? I'm like a habu. Once I bite your ass, you stay bit. If you don't know what the habu is, it's a snake that I first met in Okinawa. And so they're giving us this brief on the habu, and they're like, yeah, it bites you, and it doesn't let go. You're like, what? Like, what kind of stupid shit is that? I mean, all snakes bite and let go. Oh, the habu doesn't. And so, like, that's me. I believe what's critical is to connect with somebody, right, who thinks that you get it. that they're not alone, that they have somebody to talk to, and that you, by virtue of post-traumatic winning and 4 years of interviewing everybody from World War II to Vietnam to Iraq and Afghanistan, that you understand and you've shown them there's a path you can go down and you can live a wonderful life. You can live a wonderful life, a great life. That connection that you make is the difference, is the difference between them killing themselves and them not killing themselves. It's that personal connection that you have with somebody else. Okay, now, question. The culture's changed. It's softer. They come, they experience traumatic things in life. Suicide isn't a big issue. Okay? When I was a kid, you couldn't kill yourself because you'll go to hell. Right? And we all went to church. Like, shit, man, my life sucks, but the last thing I need to do is be rolling around in hell for eternity. Right? Because, like, what? There's nothing but assholes down in hell anyway. I mean, who needs that? So there's not that restraint, right? So, and as we talked about on this show, you get raised that your feelings are really important. How does that make you feel, Michael? Are you okay? And you go out in the big bad world and you find out nobody cares about your feelings. Okay, so now I say all of that to say this. Okay, under the guise of when the landscape changes and you don't, who does most of the counseling for young Marines in the Marine Corps? Answer, other young Marines. 80% of the officers that will counsel young Marines have less than 3 years experience in the Marine Corps. Yep. Yet less than 3 years. And I don't mean while you're in school. I mean after you finish all your schooling and you're out actually going to work. Less than 3 years. Right? I would say 80% of the NCOs that are counseling people have less than 5 years. So you have novices counseling novices. And this is the institutionalization if you're interested in making those suicide numbers continue to go down. What do you have to do? Okay, so what you're asking for from your novice leaders is leadership 801. But they're at 101 and 201. They're not at 801, right? Furness, Mattis, you know, those guys are, you know, at 1201 leadership level, you know, graduate PhD level leadership understanding. Over 75 years of experience between those two guys, a dozen combat deployments to have learned these lessons. And they're telling you, you've got to love them. You've got to know them better. But how do novices do that? And what is the program that teaches novices to do that? And just know this, there probably was a day and time in the Marine Corps when, and all the services, that because of the fabric, and I would say tougher, right, more rough and tumble young people in this country, the counseling piece wasn't as critical because the consequences were they might get drunk and do something stupid, but they weren't going to kill themselves. That the sun is set on that day. So the counseling piece, you know, maybe if you got to it, because it doesn't appear on anybody's training program, you kind of get to it when you get to it. So we have all these events, go to the range, we're going to go to the field this week, you know, we're in garrison prepping for this, right? Nowhere in the TEEP does it say counseling. Doesn't exist. That's how important it is. Yet, leaders say leadership is the single most important thing we do. And so, counseling your Marines, and they're your number one weapon, is so important that we don't put it anywhere. Okay. And then we've outsourced. If you have an issue, financial, go to them. If you have a mental health, go to them. And you're just kind of an asset manager. And that person gets isolated. And then they go down a bad path towards suicide. So here's the question. How do you change that? How do you get novice leaders, lieutenants? I won't throw captains in there because they've been around long enough. Well, how about if I do throw captains in there? Everybody at the company level. How do you make sure that they get the training? So where do we teach it? Well, we don't teach it at the basic school. We don't teach it at EWS, counseling techniques, how to be a great counselor. We don't teach that. You know, what do we say? Well, you know, it's in the counseling order, Marine Corps counseling order. Okay. How about on the enlisted side? Don't teach it in the sergeant course. Don't teach it at the staff academy. Don't teach it in the first sergeant course. So where do you learn these really, really important skills? Answer is you don't. You don't. So the landscape's changed. The consequences are higher. And the institution, because here's what, I mean, here's what, so what post-traumatic winning is it door kicks the issue. It door kicks the issue. And I want to read you an email that I got over the weekend. And like I said, I have the coolest job, honestly. Email. Wanted to reach out and say thank you for the amazing class. I am with XYZ. So we were in the base theater on Thursday. It's the first time I've heard anyone in the Marine Corps tell the Marines that PTSD does not have to be combat related, not to fake or not talk about mental illness, and that drinking trauma away is extremely counterproductive. I'm truly thankful that men in leadership positions finally have the balls to teach this to young, impressionable boys and now girls that join. I run a nonprofit on the weekends called XYZ. We are a nonprofitable charity. All profits and donations fund certain events they do. Our team of volunteers go to shelters, mental health facilities, and are in the streets to serve. Through doing what they do, they're able to show those in need that we care about them, giving them hope and a person to talk to. The goal is to save lives, to help prevent suicide, to get people talking about mental health. I've met a lot of good people and military members through it. With Corona and the riots, it's been difficult to continue, so we have found other ways to help, such as making care kits and passing out food. Would love to learn more about mental health and your post-traumatic winning plan. Right, so that's from a Marine, a corporal sitting in that class on Thursday. Right, it makes your heart swell that somebody gets it. Okay. But the environment, the landscape has changed, and the institution hasn't changed quick enough, hasn't seen it quick enough. Now, the Marine Corps has made some changes, right? In the 90s, set up the Crucible because they thought that, you know, we need to have an event that really emphasizes this change in culture. Okay, so we do that. During General Neller's commandancy, if that's a word, which I don't know that it is. But anyway, during the Neller administration in the Marine Corps, there was thought that Marines needed time at the recruit depot post graduation so that they could hang out. They would see their drill instructors in a little bit different light. And it would help them get on their feet. And when they went out to the operating forces, there would be less stupidity. These Marines wouldn't be as stupid, yada, yada, yada. So there's been some modifications to this change in our culture. But the key one isn't there yet. And so it dawns on me. Bing! I've got a kid who's a company commander. Right? Let me just tell you, one of the coolest parts of my whole trip was going to see where my kid works. So if you're a commander in the Marine Corps from company level up, you have a sign out in front of your CP and it says Apache Company or whatever your organization is. That's what mine is, right? Commanding officer, and then it has your name, right? Your initials, M.F. McNamara. So, you know, I walk up, here's the sign, my kid's name on it, right? And it always makes me laugh, right? Because I couldn't bring his bike in from the rain. I mean, his nickname was the professor. And so now he's a company commander. So it was cool. So he and I talk about it, you know? And so anyway, to me, post-traumatic winning will now have a mandatory leadership class wherever it goes to raise these significant issues because the counseling, right? So and the way you have to do this is, one, you have to get to know them, right? You have to get to know each and every one of them. And then, and I think there's a continuum that goes with this. So knowing them is first. Two, care about them, help them, love them. And three, counsel them. Once you know them, once you know where they come from, once you know what they value, once you know what they want to be in life, and then you see their job performance, you can sit down and say, hey, I don't think we're where we need to be here and here. I mean, that becomes easy, but it's not apparent. I mean, hell, you're listening to guys with 75 years of experience saying, hey, I think I have pretty good insight into this. Talking to people with less than 3 years of experience who are trying to become, you know, solid professionals. And they've never worked harder in their lives at something than they do it being Marines. They've never spent more time, you know, on a job than they do being Marines. So anyway, interesting stuff. But again, this is how you get it from being, you know, the class door kick it, right? That's the door kick. This is the truth. And this is where you can go. What makes it reality? What makes it not random? You know, we got a really good CO, you know, and a really good first sergeant, and so we do this stuff. Next guy, right, who's the CO, next guy who's the first sergeant, not as hot, and it falls off, and all those numbers go back up. It's the randomization of leadership. How do we raise it? What are the tools that we can give and issue? So what are the equipment we give them, and what is the training we give them to go ahead and sustain and modify the institutional response? I shouldn't say sustain. What are the tools and training that we give them to modify the institutional stance, knowing that the landscape has changed and we have to change with it? Because I will tell you this, they're every bit as capable. You watch a fight. Yeah, they're every bit as capable, but they come from a different land. And we have a choice. We can either stand where we used to stand and say, you know, shit, you need to come here, or we can go get them, and we can slowly but surely move their cheese and take them there. And so, anyway, so I was kind of fired up about that. But progress, and that's what, to me, again, the importance of the leadership, 2nd Marine Division, you know, battalion commanders and regimental commanders who get after this stuff all the time and who are trying to learn the hard lessons about how do you do this better. He says know them. How do we know them better? How do I, so when something bad happens, I don't have a sergeant and a lieutenant look at me saying, yeah, we didn't know that. Yeah, well, I know this, but I'm not sure about that guy. No, you've got to know them. Somebody's got to create that connection, because it's that connection that keeps them from doing stupid shit. How do we get better at that? So, so that should be the continuing action of leadership. But I can tell you, from what I see, it's relatively haphazard and with predictive results. The statistics inside the DOD relative to suicide, in my opinion, are predictable when novice leaders aren't trained and equipped with the tools that get them from leadership 101 and 201 to leadership 401. If you can't get them to 401, then you're stuck with your statistics. You've got to get them to 401. And what is 401? I understand I got to know them, and I understand I heard Sergeant Major talking about how recruiters get trained. Recruiters get trained to have a conversation. And the secret, and I know this from interviewing people, and that's why the importance of, if you notice the way I interview, there's a method to the madness. Somebody comes on, most of the time they're nervous. So, where are you from? Well, everybody knows where they're from, right? And so they start talking about, I'm from Lima, Ohio, home of the M1A1 tank factory. Like, what? Yeah, exactly. So then it's like, so how does the Marine Corps get on your radar, right? You've heard that question a million times. Well, I mean, they know that too. So they just relax and tell you the story, unless you're Will Costantini, and then you say, I don't know. I don't remember. And then your mom emails me and says, I know why. I'll tell you. So ultimately, that shit gets sorted out too. So, but there's a method to that, and that is what? You get them to relax and talk about themselves. So recruiters get trained in that. And the conversation normally is steered by their responses. Oh, really? Your uncle was in the Marine Corps? When and what unit? What did he do? So then you have a conversation about your uncle. What's he do now? Oh, he's this, that, and the other thing. Oh, so you used to listen to his story. Yeah. And then I read. Give me a book you read. So it's just this conversation. Well, recruiters get taught that skill, right? And Marine Corps, pretty robust recruiting program, pretty successful recruiting program. And so might we teach everybody those skills, how to have a conversation? And again, knowing that you're going to get the full spectrum. Some people that find themselves in leadership positions aren't comfortable with that. It's not how they grew up. They were good performers, and now they've been promoted. And now they're going to have to do something they're not good at. So what? And you know, look, they're fully capable. They'll learn, but you got to, you know. And then who does it? To me, I have in my mind some of the great sergeant majors that I've met. But if I was a first lieutenant, or if I was a second lieutenant, more importantly, right? Did a first sergeant would sit down with me in his office over a table and say, "Okay, let me give you some tools, and we're going to spend about 4 weeks going through this, and I'm going to make you a great, you know, at counseling Marines." Okay, but you've got to understand, just you and a first sergeant sitting there shooting the shit, the chance to get to know him and the chance for him to get to know you and influence you in your career. And in my mind's eye, I have General Zinni's letter to staff NCOs in my head. And in the letter, he writes what a huge impact his first platoon sergeant had on him and how that guy used to make him look good and how much he respected him. And I'll read the letter to you, okay? This is written on 26 April 1989 from the commanding officer of the 9th Marine Regiment. Subject, the staff non-commissioned officer. I've been fortunate in the 24 years that I've been a Marine officer to always have had a high-quality staff NCO at my side. From the time I joined my 1st Rifle Platoon in 1965 to my current position as a regimental commander, a staff NCO has been there to advise me, to teach me, to motivate me, and encourage me to assure I provide the very best leadership to our unit and to guarantee things were properly done according to the spirit and intent of directions I gave or received. The value of the staff NCO for me has been the experience, knowledge, and example he brings to the unit. He has been there. He has successfully come through the ranks. He knows how to best translate orders and directions into efficient and effective action by Marines. The traditional view is that the staff NCO is the backbone of the Corps is absolutely correct. The image of the Corps is embodied by the Dailies, the Quicks, the Bazelones, and other legendary staff NCOs of our past. These were men whose courage and expertise built confidence and esprit along the chain of command from above and below. They made things happen on the battlefield and in garrison. Staff NCOs enforced the standards, be it in combat or in peacetime. They're the conscience of the unit and the keeper of those high, tough standards that separate the Corps from other military organizations. And he talks about, General Z, when he talks about this letter, he talks about his first platoon sergeant and how that guy made him look good. He used to set up things and then he'd make him look good. So this exchange, I mean, what a great way to learn, right? What a great way to learn. So anyway, I have that in my head. How to institutionalize, right? How to institutionalize, know them better and love them. Long way to that point. Okay, I know that, but good morning to you on a Monday, short week, 4th of July coming up. I think All Marine Radio is going to do a 96, take Friday and Monday off. That's right, just like other federal employees. Don't be a hater. So, United States Marine Corps Band makes today official. Good morning. This is dedicated to Marines I met 18 months ago, and I saw a bunch of them last week. Some of them came down to the theater to meet them. I had lunch and dinner with others, and they're. It made me so happy to see them, to see how well they're doing. It affirmed for me the role, what post-traumatic winning is all about and what it does. And so this is dedicated to them. God bless you all. Thanks for coming out. To one of you, thanks for buying me lunch. Yeah. Yeah, he said, well, you bought last time. I said, oh, you remembered? He started laughing. He said, I knew you would. I said, well, I didn't really, but I thought I did. But anyway, this is dedicated to them. And then, and also to the new Marines I met, right, who, you know, who were living in darkness. And now know that they can live in a good place. They know they can live in a good place. So, all those Marines, is dedicated to you.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the core, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country, we care about what happens to everyone. Brain Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Time to check the weather in Marineland, so we will do that. Currently in Quantico, whoa, partly sunny in 86. Down the coast in North Carolina, Camp Lejeune, it is partly sunny in 85. I had somebody again say, you know, there's no R in that word, right? I said, yeah, I know that, but that's how the family pronounces it. So whether there's an R in it or not. And they looked at me and they said, really? I said, yeah, really? I didn't know that. I said, no, nobody does, right? Yeah, so if the family pronounces their name like that, then guess how we pronounce it? He said, like that. He said, but nobody does. I said, I know, because you see it on a sign. Lejeune. It's Lejeune, according to the family. Got it. All right. Marine Corps Base 29 Palms, a little bit cooler. Sunny and 74 degrees. At Camp Pendleton, clouds and 62. It rained yesterday here on the West Coast. And it's cold. What is going on? This is called a June gloom. The old saying in California, invite your family in June, your friends in September. That's right. That's right. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark, cloudy, and, well, sun coming up, cloudy and 72 in Hawaii. Okinawa, dark, cloudy, and 82. Afghanistan, early in the evening, clear evening, and 94 degrees in south central Afghanistan. And in western Iraq, sunny and 90 and 104. That's right. Currently at the home of All Marine Radio, it is 66 degrees under cloudy skies with a 10% chance of rain. Going to warm all the way up to 70 this afternoon. This is not what we're looking for. And top out at 70 today. For tomorrow, look for a high of 73. Same on Wednesday. Thursday, 75. And on Friday, on 78. So a warming trend here in Southern California. So, I was going to talk. Well, there's probably only one article that I want to talk about. That I've done some reading on. So the whole Russian bounty thing. So I will get you to the bottom of that. I'll get you the information that I think that you need, that I think you need to know. Yeah, there you have it. Big brother watching out for your needs. So don't, intelligence can be tricky. So I'll help you not be tricked by that, because that's the kind of dude that I am. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good, but are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Okay, let's talk about the bounty that Russians intelligence reports say Russians have placed on Americans. All right, so that's not a small deal. Okay, so let me walk you through the reporting. Originally reported in the New York Times, I'm going to take you through the Washington Post reporting on the subject. Okay, so the articles are written by Ellen Nakashima, Karen DeYoung, Missy Ryan, and John Hudson. Let me tell you who Ellen Nakashima is. Two-time Pulitzer-winning reporter covering intelligence and national security matters for the Washington Post. Joins the Post in 1995. Karen DeYoung is an associate editor, national security correspondent for the Post. In more than three decades at the paper, she served as bureau chief, blah, blah, blah. Missy Ryan, whose name I'm familiar with, but I don't know why I know Missy Ryan. Missy Ryan writes about the Pentagon, military issues, and national security for the Washington Post. Joined the Post in 2014 from Reuters, where she reported on national security and foreign policy. And John Hudson. John Hudson is a national security reporter at the Post, covering the State Department and diplomacy. Okay, so here's the article. Russian bounties has offered to Taliban-linked militants to kill coalition forces in Afghanistan. Now, these are important words, are believed to have resulted in deaths of several U.S. service members, according to intelligence gleaned from U.S. military interrogations of captured militants in recent months. Several people familiar with the matter said it was unclear. Again, unclear. So the first statement is, are believed to have. Second one said the matter, it was unclear exactly, now this is their reporting, these are reporters, okay, how many Americans or coalition troops from other countries may have been killed or targeted under the program. The report goes on, right? Where does this come from? The intelligence was passed up from U.S. Special Operations Forces based in Afghanistan. Okay. Now, the article cites the disturbing intelligence, which the CIA was tasked with reviewing and later confirmed. So, there's a hyperlink there. Okay. The disturbing intelligence. So, we go to article number 2, which talks about the disturbing intelligence. Written by the same people, except John Hudson drops out and Shane Harris drops in, or comes in. Okay. Now, the article says this. A Russian military spy unit offered bounties to Taliban-linked militants to attack coalition forces in Afghanistan, including U.S. and British troops, in a striking escalation of the Kremlin's hostility towards the United States, American intelligence has found. Talk says it's first reported in the New York Times. Okay, the officials said administration leaders learned of reported bounties in recent months from U.S. intelligence agencies, prompting internal discussions, including a large interagency meeting in late March. According to one person familiar with the matter, the responses discussed at that meeting included sending a diplomatic communication to relay disapproval and authorizing new comments. Spokespeople for the NSA, the Pentagon, and the CIA all declined comment. In a statement late Saturday, Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe said, quote, he had confirmed that neither the president nor the vice president had ever been briefed on any intelligence related to the Russia bounty, and that all news reports about an alleged briefing are inaccurate. The Russian Ministry of Affairs denied it, backhanding the report, and says at the end, however, what else can be expected from intelligence which miserably failed the 20-year war in Afghanistan? The Taliban have denied involvement. We categorically deny the notion of ever planning or carrying out targeted attacks against the U.S. or foreign forces at the behest of foreign intelligence or for the sake of collecting a bounty. Taliban spokesman. I'm not even going to try that name. All right, so that's them, right? How do we know the Russians are lying? Their lips are moving. The Taliban, how do we know they're lying? I'm not sure. Probably their lips are moving. Okay. The article goes on. Now, what I want you to do is separate the reactions from people not in the intelligence community, right? Because that's just politics, okay? So I want you to turn your squelch up and just turn off all the different comments of people, right? So the article goes on. Now, this is the article about the intelligence report itself. It was not immediately clear whether any militants had succeeded in killing Americans or allied forces after being approached by the Russians. News of the murky initiative comes as U.S. diplomats attempt to kindle political talks that could put an end to the country's longest war in its 19th year now. So again, I'm going to read that statement again. It was not immediately clear whether any militants had succeeded in killing Americans or allied forces after being approached by Russia. Okay, so here's the question. As you read, now again, I'm going to take you back to intelligence reporting for September 11th. Okay, so after September 11th, you go through a stack of reporting, right, and somebody says, there it was. Okay, well, it's a first-time report, right? It's unsubstantiated, and there is an element of the plot in there. And in retrospect, you could say, yeah, we had a report, but it wasn't in any way, shape, or form validated because the person never reported. So they had no idea of knowing, given the other 9,000 pieces of data that came through the pipe that day. Okay. So the attempt to stoke violence against Americans, if confirmed, would represent a significant departure from Moscow's earlier position towards Islamic militants in Afghanistan. Previously, U.S. officials had cited that what they characterized as sporadic low-level Russian support for the Taliban, including a supply of arms via Afghanistan's northern border. While Moscow's motives for allegedly offering bounties were not immediately clear, officials said they might include retaliation for the U.S. military's 2018 killing of Russian mercenary troops, supposedly in the Area 400 in Syria by Marines and Delta Force guys, when Russians attempt to overrun an outpost with tanks and artillery and shit like that. They got the shit whacked out of them. Right? Those mercenaries were working for a guy named Yevgeny Prigozhin, an oligarch with links to Putin in Syria, or simply, as one official put it, an attempt to muddy the negotiations on the Afghans by throwing a stick into it. So motive, right? Motive. The unit that officials identified as responsible for the offering the bounties has also been linked to the poisoning and attempted murder of former Russian spy Sergei Kripal in Britain in 2018. The Russians, right, are famous for, like, putting plutonium in somebody's coffee. News that the cloaked operation comes as speculation mounts about the future of U.S. forces in Afghanistan. While the Pentagon has completed its initial drawdown to about 8,600 as the first step, officials describe the exit plan to get to 4,000 as conditions-based and say those conditions have not been met. So those are the facts. Again, so is this a unit in Afghanistan, right, that it was approached by, you know, a Taliban organization that was approached by Russians? Is the initiative coming from the Kremlin? I mean, there's a difference in all of that in terms of scope, right? In terms of scope. And, you know, what was the scope of the program, and did anybody ever die because of it? Okay, let me go on. Ask the comment, John Ulyatt, a national security spokesman, said that the veracity of the underlying allegations continues to be evaluated. The CIA and the Defense and State Departments declined to comment. Okay, so that's a NSC spokesman. The veracity of the underlying allegations continue to be evaluated. Richard Grenell, who served, he was just the acting director of National Intelligence, right, left the post last month as a permanent guy got appointed, tweeted that, "I never heard this, and it's disgusting how you continue to politicize intelligence." Okay. A third person familiar with the issue said, "I don't think that anybody withheld anything and screwed up by not letting the president in on time. Until you're absolutely sure of the intelligence, okay? Remember that caveat. Until you're absolutely sure of the intelligence and the NSC has drawn up policy options, you weren't going to walk in the Oval Office." And finally this, and then we'll take a break and Will Cosentini is going to join me. In years past, there were persistent reports that Russia was supplying arms to the Taliban. Carter Malkasian, who served as a senior advisor to the previous chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph F. Dunford, Jr., said Russia had cultivated a relationship with certain Taliban elements, largely in northern Afghanistan, beginning around 2015. The outreach was partly as a response to Moscow's concern about the threat posed by Islamic State militants in the region, and also out of a desire to see U.S. troops leave the region. But more recently, U.S. officials said that Russia, which tried and failed to start its own Afghan peace process, has been cooperative and helpful since the Taliban signed a peace deal, including a plan for a U.S. withdrawal. Malkasian, now a scholar at CNA, think tank, right, said the bounty operation, if true, could be a random initiative rather than one that reflects a well-coordinated program ordered by the highest levels of the government. Now, I think that's important, okay? This dude is no stranger to these reports and things like this. So what you're trying to, right, what you're trying to glean from all the reporting is scope of it, where it comes from, and then was it ever implemented, you know, and the impact of it. None of those questions are answered in all of this. But, you know, the whirling dervish of a firestorm that gets started because of it, I mean, is humongoloid, right? Malkasian said that a primary Russian goal in Afghanistan continues to be the exit of American forces, but not at any cost. Quote, they may want us out, and they may be happy to see a few Americans die, he said, but I don't think they want to see the Taliban take over. So, anyway, so, I mean, to me, ask yourself, and again, ask yourself this, when you look at things like this, the juice versus the squeeze. So a few Americans get dead, we pay a bounty to the Taliban. What happens when this gets out? And it will, and you know it will. The damage to U.S.-Russian relationships and what the United States could do economically to Russia is far worse than what gain. The Americans have already said they're leaving. So, to me, there's more to this story than you're seeing. So, and now that it's been whipped up into a political issue, we'll certainly see more of it. So, anyway, I wanted to bring that to you. July 4th weekend is coming up. Watch the crime, right? You're already seeing it surge in different cities in the country, right? Are the police going to pull back and say, you know what? It ain't worth it to my life, to my career, to get involved in this. And know this, there's activists that are dying because, you know, the outrageous videotape that people have been watching for the last month has dried up. The need to create that again over the 4th of July weekend. And just one note on the COVID thing, right? Nobody's invincible. Young people tend to think that. It's one of the problems that we have in the military. Yeah, I can get on a motorcycle. I can ride at 100 miles an hour. I can weave in and out of traffic. But it's not going to impact my life, right? Wrong. So, yeah. Life is tough. It's tougher when you're stupid. So, memo to everybody out there, the rules of the universe apply to you. Okay. So you would do well to take heed of those and know that, COVID-19 is a deadly virus. And take the basic steps that you're supposed to take to protect yourself and to protect the people that you love. If you disregard it, you may do it at the peril of maybe not your own life, but maybe somebody close to you who you love. So don't be stupid. Will Cosentini is going to join me. We're going to talk some more news on a Monday. Grant Newsham's going to join me on tomorrow. And we're going to talk about China in the news again this week. So anyway, don't touch that dial. More of this fine program coming up next.